get on the train. Pimpin' ain't easy.
Hello and welcome to Puddin' Ain't Easy, Ahsoka. I'm here with me, as always, is the chopper to my hair. It's Scott McLeod, everybody.
I think I'm just a smidge less genocidal than Chopper is. but only a little bit.
So Scott, you've had an interesting weekend. You went to see the wrestling All In at Wembley Stadium. I take it you had a great time.
Oh yeah, hell of a time. I was down there on the Saturday before it. I know there were other wrestling shows on, was in the vicinity, and I would love to have went to one of them, but then it was more so just us guys going around London, finding cool places to go for a drink, everything. So we went out on a Saturday night, got very drunk, singing two random songs in a bar, to the point where we started inserting LA Knight references into songs that were playing on the DJ was playing, like just inserting the word yeah in the songs. I mean, it started because Miley Cyrus's Party in the USA came on, and there was an inbuilt yeah in that, but and it just spun from there. We found out we went to the section by the water where there were like several bars in the close proximity to each other, and we went to one of them because we heard it karaoke, but we weren't in on the night the karaoke was on. They went, oh no, it's usually on a Friday, and we're like, ah, oh, yeah. And then we found out, oh yeah, it's usually hosted by Barry from EastEnders.
Oh really?
Yeah, they had to play Barry from EastEnders, does regular does like these karaoke nights run about that area of London by the water. I can't remember the name of the place that we were at was called, but yeah, he does a thing called Barry-oke.
That's genius.
And then also we're singing at the bar and everything, and then going to All In the next night. By Monday morning, I barely had any voice left. So you're lucky you hear me talk as much as you're hearing me right now, with the state my voice was in after all the weekend. But yeah, it was cool. Me, my brother, and about seven other guys all in the one Airbnb in the middle of London. Also, one thing about the weekend, if I never get on another fucking tube train, it'll be too soon.
You didn't enjoy the tube, then?
Well, no. It was more so the fact that nothing seemed to be there. It was always at least two or three fucking changes getting on and off the tube, tap on, tap off, in terms of like getting through the barriers. Because I'm in Glasgow, where we used to have a big circular system with our tube station, with our tube system. I think my brother summed it up best in that everything is direct in Glasgow, but nothing is on time. Whereas in London, everything is on time, but nothing's direct.
You didn't see a Mr. Phil Brooks on any of these trains by any chance, did you?
No, I didn't. We did. Sadly not. Oh, speaking of tubes, you know, there was a whole debacle with air traffic control, I'm sure you may have heard about. Mm. And if anyone here has tried to travel recently, you'll know about it as well. We found out about that as we were leaving, checking out of our accommodation on Monday morning. And someone's like, ah, it'll be fine. It'll sure be fine. As the hours went on, like, oh no, it's probably not going to be fine. So we basically made the decision. We managed to get a refund. Most of us at least did on our flights, and we used that money to pay for a train ticket.
Right.
We got a 4-hour Avanti West Coast train back to Glasgow, which I started feeling tired an hour into it. So I made the next 3 hours fucking drag on. But we managed to get back to Glasgow right about the time we would have gone back had we flown anyway. But the thing was, we booked it for an hour from when we'd booked it, so then we had to figure out, okay, what train do we get on to get back to get to London Euston to get this train. And we had to change twice on the tube. A couple of guys had to hold the doors open because our pal Alan was running a bit behind, and he managed to get on the tube. And I said to him, oh, no man left behind and stuff like that. And then the very next tune, we had to get off one last tube to get to London Euston. I nearly got left behind.
Oh, God.
Because the train door started shutting. Our brother was holding the doors open. I'm trying to hold, like, force the doors open. Like fucking Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man 2. At one point, the door shut on my arm, which hurt. And my back's looking right against the door once I'm in the train. And then 2 seconds later, a bunch of people start moving towards me to get off the train, expecting me just to move out of their way. Like, where the fuck do you want me to go? I mean, I've heard all sorts of things about Londoners and the tube and how rude people can be. And it was on the Monday that we found that out in full swing.
Sounds like good times.
Yeah, public transport, you know, -5 stars, but the whole everything else, yeah. I mean, the drink prices were what they were. I was expecting that. But in terms of my seats and all in itself, I can't complain about that. I had really great seats for that.
Yeah, drink prices are always expensive at these sort of venues. That's just the way of the world, unfortunately.
Yeah. Not just the drink prices. I mean, I bought a packet of Haribo Star Mix from the concession counter, which cost me £4.
Fucking hell!
I know. The shop down the road from me sells them for £1. I mean, I'll say enough about the fucking drink prices. Like, yeah, fine, it's London, whatever. But it's fucking Haribo. This injustice cannot stand.
Got having to remortgage the house just to afford a packet of sweets in London.
I know. Unbelievable. For my first time in London, it was a hell of a weekend, so it was in a good way to start off my week's annual leave that I'm currently enjoying by doing absolutely fuck all.
And that's how we should spend our annual leave, especially when you're young like you are. So do you think you'll go to the All In next year, which they announced will be at Wembley again?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the show is I was trying not to look at the screens because, like, we could see right down the ring from a certain angle, so you could see a decent amount of it, but there was also the truss that was set up with a big screen above it. So when you look down, the screen caught your eye first. So I'm like, you know, to look down at the ring, not the screen. You didn't pay all this money to watch a screen. But when you've seen the screen at the end of the Adam Cole MJF main event, you could see on the screen the title graphic come up. So anything that happened after was like, okay, this is, we're off the air now, so let's see what happens here. And then, yeah, they made the announcement August 25th next year, they're coming back. And yeah, immediately overall, me and my group were all discussing it. I'm sure we had a group chat heading into this weekend where that same group chat guy's been posting Airbnb listings for next year. Because apparently the one we're staying in has already been booked up for that time next year.
Wow.
I know.
Probably cost you twice as much as well.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm sure most of the team will make it. I know there are a lot of lads who are saving up, who I was with, are saving up for things. So we'll see how much of the crew that went this year actually makes it to next year.
Yeah. Your brother might be struggling if he's got a little one on the way.
Yep. I've got a couple of guys I know who have got, like, kids coming in, weddings to pay for, so. And then there's me.
That's not the wedding, it's the wrestling!
Well, and amongst our group, we had a friend of ours called Tom who came up, flew all the way from Rotterdam to be here for All In. And then He left us earlier to get his plane, and then he unfortunately didn't have the distinction of at first being able to change his flight, because the first thing he was told it was delayed, then it was on time, then it got cancelled, and then apparently he had to pay to get the Eurostar home.
Oh, God.
He managed to, yeah, but the Eurostar was to Amsterdam, so then he had to get another train from Amsterdam to where he stayed. So, but he managed to get home at like 10 o'clock at night his time.
I mean, it's all right for people like Liam who actually live in London. They don't have too much to worry about.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to meet up with Liam. I wanted to meet up with him because he owed me a drink after everything he said about my ma. But unfortunately, you know, maybe next year. In terms of drinks, so we went into this hotel near near Wembley, because there was this pre-show party at the Box Park, which was across the road, but it wasn't open yet. So we were told to come back. So we went into the lobby of this hotel because it was starting to rain a little bit before the show. And we went to go get a couple of drinks. I bought two drinks. And this is the most money I spent in one go all weekend, because it was £16 for two drinks.
Yeah, why were you at the Hilton?
I didn't realise it till I checked my balance afterwards to just double check how much money I paid, because I'd been putting it off until I was ready to go home, until I checked how much I'd actually spent. Again, it was actually less than I worried I would, so it was still more than I probably should have spent. But then I checked how much it was, and I remember on the occasion when I went to give pay by contactless, the guy turned the screen away from me and just showed me the contactless a little bit. Like, this is not a good sign. The guy doesn't want me to see the screen and to see how much he's charging me for these drinks.
This guy's from Scotland. If he sees how much it is, he won't pay, sir.
This man, I don't need this Scottish man having a heart attack in the middle of our lobby. It's the big one. Uncle. Yeah. Did you get a chance to watch All In Yourself, Carl?
I haven't. So I've seen a few clips and highlights here and there, but no. Not really watching a lot of wrestling at the moment, in all fairness.
Oh, that's fair. But hopefully, I think it's the biggest wrestling show I've ever been to in terms of size. Mm. And it's probably the most fun I've ever had. I said that on social media when I was sharing it, but pictures from my time there, that I think it was the most fun I'd ever had at a wrestling show. The card was long, but, you know, give Tony Khan credit, he did manage to finish when he said he would, so that's good. Between now and then, you know, I've also got Impact in the end of October, so that's more live wrestling to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely, and I don't know if it's a surprise or not, putting the title on Paige in the women's match. Can't imagine she'll have it for long, though.
I think it was a case of, we wanted Jamie Hayter to have a hometown pop in London, but apparently she's not even close to being cleared yet. So then they had her, yeah, Saraya do it, which is fair enough. But Guerrero showed up. He couldn't turn out the money for Bloody Like a Prayer, but he managed to get fucking Queen for Saraya, and he got Bloody Metallica for Sting and Darby Allin. But you know, just throwing money around all over the place as Tony Khan.
He really is, isn't he? Yeah.
I do love the quickness in which they announced in the next year's show in Wembley. They're really trying to get in good with Wembley, because WWE are serious about a UK WrestleMania. They're like, guess what? You can't use Wembley.
Yeah, well, we've got Wembley on lockdown, bitches.
And then just phone up the Prince of Valley. Remember when you gave us £2 million to host Clash at the Castle? Well, how much more are you willing to spend for WrestleMania? Yeah, I've never been to Wales either, but I'll take that trip if it involves going to WrestleMania.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I will consider it for WrestleMania, because it probably cost me 3 months' rent or something to buy a ticket.
Who needs a house, you know?
I do.
just buy a tent, camp out where WrestleMania is going to be. That'll do you for 3 months.
But anyway, that's enough about the wrestling. What we're here for, and that's Ahsoka episode 3. Did it have a name? I can't remember clocking the name for it, to be honest.
I believe it was Time to Fly, something like that. I just watched it like an hour before we started recording, so it's a little fresher. I'm sure that's basically in reference to the fact that most of it took place on a ship of some description.
Yeah, I should imagine. I watched it this morning, which might as well be 6 years ago for my memory, but but yeah, we sort of open the episode more or less where we left off the last one, with Sabine and Ahsoka on the ship, and Sabine's actually been put through her paces with a bit of lightsaber training with their robot companion Hayang, and she seems to be doing quite well, I thought, and better than I'd manage anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of symbolism to samurais in this one, like the wooden stick being used in the Leader of Islets, because obviously a lot of the old samurai films, I think, influenced George Lucas originally when it came to designing this. But I did like the train, like the way that you see Hu Yang with the four kind of virtual light lightsabers, kind of looking very General Grievous, like, I thought. And then I did love this, where she does like almost exactly like Luke there, when she hands her the visor to use, which is, you can't see, like, if I can't see, how am I supposed to fight?
Yeah, she wasn't keen on that idea, but nor was Hayang. He's like, are you sure this is a good idea?
Yeah. And so, obviously, she's like, how do you think she's doing? Like, she's doing better, but not great.
Yeah. And so she puts her through her paces with the with the visor on so she can't see. And again, to be honest, she did a lot better than I'd manage. I'd have been falling. I'd have been falling over all over the place. I would have.
I like watching these episodes, and I like quickly going online, seeing what other people are saying, if they've spotted something that I maybe hadn't missed. You know, getting opinions of people who have a lot more time on their hands to spot things than I do. I've seen a lot of people saying that her training, you know, without being able to see everything else, like we've seen it as a Jedi training method before, but some people thought it's also maybe a little nod to another Rebels nod to the fact that, you know, Kanan Jarrus was a Jedi, and then he had to learn how to fight when he was blinded, and also he trained Sabine a little bit when she was wielding the darksaber. So I'll nod to Kanan, even though we know, you know, I think definitively we know he's not going to be in this show.
Probably not, no, unless Freddie Prinze Jr. turns up as a Force ghost or something, who knows.
You know, we'd be cool though. But yeah, a classic kind of Jedi training method, and yeah, she's trying to help her anticipate. And the way she's kind of just wildly just swinging the blade, which she thinks she knows where Ahsoka is, it's kind of like how she was fighting during that fight in episode one. And it does seem to be a thing, like, if you're too angry or you're a lot less experienced, you're tending to just like swing the lightsaber like wildly, whereas we see the more experienced ones are a lot more, there's a lot more technique to people who have been training for a lot longer.
Yeah, definitely. She's a bit sort of wild and uncouth with her techniques at the moment, as Sabine. But I'm sure in true TV fashion, within an episode and a half, she'll be fighting like a master all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think they're trying to imply that maybe she does secret, like it's all within all living things and everything. Like maybe she is in tune with the Force, but she's never known how to harness it before. And obviously, explaining the fact that she has trained previous to the show, it implies like, oh, well, she had some training before this, now this is additional training. So it's not a case of, oh, she spent 3 weeks in worth of training, and now she's a great Jedi. So this is her picking up from her previous training.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was just making a bit of a sort of joke.
I know
some TV shows operate where 1 minute somebody's learning to do something, and then half an episode later, all of a sudden, they've mastered it completely. And you're like, this is a bit unrealistic. But which hasn't happened on this yet. You know, I was just saying that could happen.
But yeah, so he even says later on to Hu Yang that he doesn't need her to become a Jedi, so maybe she doesn't want her to fully master the Force yet, as long as she can know how to wield her saber effectively and defend herself, i.e. not have what happened to her when she had her fight with Shin happen again.
Yeah, and maybe be some sort of useful backup rather than, you know, a robot that wants to stay too far away in a spaceship. But next scene, we jump to Hera on the New Republic ship, and we get to see her son in live action, which I was starting to wonder about him because he hadn't been mentioned on the series so far, and I've been thinking, I'm sure she had a son at the end of Rebels, but there we are. So that was answered for me.
Also, love the touch though. He doesn't exactly look like his mum, but he does have green hair.
And his father was Kanan Jarrus, so he may be force sensitive himself.
Yeah, he says he wants to be a Jedi, and Yaradoshi might show signs that he's sensitive. And if only Hera knew a Jedi who could help him along with that.
Yeah, if only.
I do love the fact she's like, oh, is this going to be a Jedi? Like, how did you know that? Chopper told me, and Chopper just said, like,
Yeah. How these people understand droids like Chopper and that, I'll never know.
I assume it's like Groot and Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes, I'd spend long enough around them, then you glean from maybe from context what they're saying. But I used to think there was just a case of Dave Lloyd just makes weird noises into a microphone. That's how he does it. Apparently, no. Well, he does say the line, like proper lines, they just distort it in post. And you can. So, basically, the idea, like, you only hear the human side, the conversation, or whatever, but he basically says the other part, they just distort it and make him sound more droid like.
I suppose it's easier for the actors to have the actual line fed to them. But Hera's there to speak to the Senate, well, members of the Senate, some senators, and the new Chancellor, which is Muff. What's her name? I forget.
Mon Mothma. Mon
Mothra, that's it.
As soon as she showed up on screen, I'm like, okay, -5 stars this episode so far.
And yeah, she's trying to convince them that they need to sort of send. Troops, reinforcements, whatever, to try and find Grand Admiral Thrawn, but they pretty much think it's a wild goose chase, and I think she's using it as a cloak to search for her lost friend Ezra, you can sort of see their point in that, but they are overlooking the fact that Grand Admiral Thrawn is at large, and you do wonder if any of them might be secret Empire sympathisers after what we saw in the factories.
As soon as she mentions like what the factory, what was happening there, it's like, we've all been arrested, so surely that means that everything's okay now. You know, we've got former New Republic, former Imperial people working through all sectors of the Republic. You know, they're all loyal. Yeah, well, these people shouted like for the Empire, so it doesn't sound loyal to me.
No. I mean, where's Palpatine when you need him? At least he got things done.
I know. And so you've got Hera basically because Mos Mothma's like now the Chancellor and everything. And again, this is more of the New Republic kind of being blind to what's in front of them, and he's basically trying to tell them that the impending threat is here, and like, well, you all fought with us in the war, it'll help me prevent another one. And that Zeno, I think, is the name of the main center who keeps trying to rebuff her and tell her that she's really just doing this to help find Ezra. And he says, like, Thrawn is dead, and as sad as it may be for you to admit, clearly your friend, you know, passed away with him, and that really gets him. So if any of them is going to be a potential sympathizer, as you said, I'm probably going to be. It's probably going to be him because he's the most adamant against doing anything about it. And he was the one that one of the other Red Bull people said, like, oh, well, he's on the call as well. So she's probably thinking, oh, shit, he's probably going to contradict everything I'm going to say.
Yeah, it could be. Or they could just be a bunch of pencil pushers who have no idea what's really going on and want to bury their heads in the sand as they so often do.
Again, it goes to show, like, I think a lot of people compare these people to those guys who are complimenting Dr. Pershing after his speech in Mando. Like, basically, they assume all the war's over, everything's fine now.
Yeah, everything's all good.
And then she has to sadly break the news to Ahsoka and Sabine that she's not going to be joining with any fleet, so basically they have to go into that unknown situation where on their own.
Yeah, so they're all on their own, and also Ahsoka talks a bit about the Force with Sabine, and these are some sort of like what I could best describe as coffee cups, and she tries to use she shows her using the Force so she can bring the cup towards her, and they Sabine with them to see if she can she has a go at trying to move it, but has about as much success as I have.
And you remember when she gets called to get that call from her to get the bad news, she's like, okay, you win this round. And so we try to explain her more to how the Force works out there, even though it's all in living things, it's not something everyone could wield, because Sabine asks like, well, if it's flowing through all of us, why doesn't everyone just use it?
Yeah, it's obviously stronger in some people than others as well. So, you know, some people can wield it like Scott, and others can't, like hey, just way it goes.
If I could use the Force, I would have forced myself a cheaper bag of fucking sweeties rather than paying four quid for Haribo.
These are only £1.50.
Like, you will accept this £1.50. This will do fine.
When she said that'd be £4, please, she said, these aren't the sweets I'm looking for.
It's one of those things when you get in a situation like you get told how much it is, as much as you don't want to pay out, you just buy it just so you can tell people, do you know how much I paid for these? That's all it's good for at that point. It's a story to tell people, like, you will not believe how much they wanted me to pay for these. Did you pay it? Well, of course I did, but I wasn't happy about it.
But yeah, they come out of hyperdrive and towards the planet where whatever they're constructing is. We know what it is now, but I don't want to give it away just yet. But of course, it looks like, as Baylan Skull said at the end of the previous episode, she's coming. So it looks like they were waiting for them, because Shin, Marek, and a bunch of sort of cannon fodder baddies are waiting for them in fighters to take them on. Because Sabine has to go to the tail gun, and she's instantly miffed that Ahsoka's removed all her protocols that she put on there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, I just like the design of these alien ships. They kind of look like alien versions of like the kind of old like Spitfires or whatever.
They do,
like,
don't they?
More ships you would have seen. I like the design. But whatever the bad guy equivalent of a red shirt is in Star Trek, that's what these guys were. Because like, there was a point towards the end of this fight where it's Marek, Shin, and one of these guys left. And when Ahsoka goes out to face them, miraculously, it's only the random alien fighter that gets killed off and not the other two main baddies. So quite convenient that, and we see more of those guys later on the planet with Baylan. So we don't know what these are. They're basically, like you said, cannon fodder, you know, henchmen that they seem to have just so that Ahsoka can kill somebody.
Yeah, they've obviously got their own. We saw they had some fighter droids, and they've obviously got some of their own sort of minions as well by the looks of it. But yeah, they get fired upon and have to sort of dodge them for a bit. Then they sort of get into view of this big doodah, the big circle-y thing we saw. And as they get nearer and nearer, the young says, get a bit closer. And it's firing at them as well, isn't it? Because, I keep forgetting people's names. Morgan Elsbeth's on there. She's got a big fuck off cannon on it that she's firing at them. And he's there. They're dodging that. And my house going, just get a bit closer. Just a bit closer.
He's trying to get a bit of a scan on it just to confirm what it is. But he has to get close enough to it. And they're like, are you fucking serious? Like, and then before that, it was like Sabine works with Ahsoka. I know a lot of, you said before, maybe not a lot happened on this show, but I think we did get a great further insight into the relationship between Sabine and Ahsoka, and them like making an effort to help, you know, put their past troubles together, past them, because they weren't arguing at first. And Hu Yang was trying to interject, and Ahsoka says later, and like, well, the way you two are carrying on, it won't be a later. So Ahsoka basically asks Sabine, like, what do you need? And she basically follows her lead, and that helps them take out some of these fighters that are chasing them. We also get, again, a further hint that Shin and this Moriel do not get along, because she basically tells her, basically, hold back, I'll take them out with this can. She does hit them, but they don't actually, she doesn't destroy them as she thought she would. And basically, Shin makes sure to remind her that she didn't get them. He's like, oh, we'll take care of this.
Yeah, she said, like, congratulations, you almost got them.
Also, quite crucial, we hear Marek speak, but his voice is very distorted.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to end up being somebody we know, or is he just this random last Inquisitor?
Well, also, there's no actor credited for voice or anything. They credited the stunt performer who does a lot of these movies, like, for the fights, they've credited him the same way they kind of credit the stunt performers they did, who did like most of the movements for Din Djarin and everything, and the Mando and everything, which is good. They haven't credited anyone as playing him properly yet, so I'm assuming that they're building to something. Otherwise, they would have just maybe shown his face, or maybe, I don't know, if they'd given him a name if he wasn't going to be anybody. Like, I've heard all sorts of out there theories that people think that secretly Ezra's under there, or a clone of Ezra's under there. Some people think it's a former Padawan like Barriss Offee under there, even though Barriss Offee was a female and they've referred to Marcus he. And some of the more out there theories have said that it's going to be like the character Starkiller from the Force Unleashed games under there. But that's a bit too out there for me.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on that. But yeah, he might be, they might assume it's a man, and that might just be a mislead. I mean, what about Asajj Ventress?
Could be, because I don't recall ever in the Clone Wars them ever confirming that she, you know, maybe she might have died in some sort of expanded media, but I don't recall getting any confirmation that she'd died.
But yeah, it could end up just being nobody for all we know. But it's fun to what do you call it?
Speculate,
that's what I'm looking for. But yeah, as they do get hit but not destroyed, Ahsoka decides to cause a bit of a distraction while Sabine Wren tries to fix the ship by putting on a spaceship and sort of basically spacewalking on her ship, which looks quite dangerous. But she just managed to take one of the no-name minions out with her lightsabers. So, you know, fair play to that.
And she's like strong enough that she can deflect like gunfire from the ships with her lightsabers, which is cool. She does get kind of blown away and kind of starts flowing through space, and she's like, Sabine, you got everything working again? Yeah, we're good now. Now come pick me up, because I'm floating through space here. All the while, Hu Yang's kind of had to shut down temporarily, and only comes back online when they finally managed to land. Like, ah, did I miss anything?
Only lots of near death situations. He just, yes, standard Jedi protocol.
Because they managed to also get everything in line. They get chased out of the surface of this planet by Marek and Shin, and they managed to divert them because they see a bunch of Pergil flying towards them, and they use that as a distraction to get away, and they managed to hide for a little bit in amongst the trees as, obviously, Marek and Shin can't find them, but later on, Balin basically could sense maybe that they're hiding in the woods, and he sends his minions to go get them.
Yeah, so, and that's sort of the last lingering shot is Balin Skull as the episode closes for this one, leaving you wanting a lot more, to be fair.
Yeah, and that can be both a good thing and a bad thing, and I think, obviously, this means that the next episode will lead into, you know, that fight that we see in the trailer, the duel between Balin and Ahsoka. I think, again, at long, that look on his face is, again, tied back to the last episode where he said it's a shame there's still a few Jedi left, so he knows that eventually he's going to come face to face with Ahsoka. and he thinks he's going to have to kill her.
Yeah, and it definitely happens there, because in the trailers you sort of see him fighting and that map thing sort of surrounding them. So you would have thought it would happen on the next episode, because we would be at the halfway point there, so things will start having to sort of escalate.
And if the map's there, then, like, because they said there's like six Hyperdrakor in that big hyperspace port that they've got that being scanned, and there's like one more to be inserted. So maybe they're trying to, you know, they'll try in vain to stop it before it can be inserted, but you know, the map's already around them. Bail and Magic to hold them off, and this allows them to find Thrawn, which they can then go back to the New Republic and say, look, see, if we had your help, we could have prevented all of this.
Yeah, and they sort of ask amongst themselves, will this be sort of powerful enough to warp into another galaxy? And Hoyang basically confirms, yes, it probably could. So that's why they're constructing this thing with so many hyperdrives.
He also says you'd probably have to know the exact coordinates you're looking for, and it seems like Ellsworth seems to kind of sense exactly where Thor is, or feels like he's calling out to from wherever he is. So she probably could sense where he is and where he is, then that probably means that's where Ezra is as well. And but like I said, I enjoyed the episode for a sense of it continues some things we've already seen. It gives us more information on that in terms of seeing again further incompetence from the New Republic and what Hera's having to deal with. The more in terms of the relationship between Sabine and Ahsoka, because I did see some people come, I don't know how you feel about this, that this felt more like a Hera and Sabine episode than an Ahsoka episode, but I thought it was more of a group thing. I think we'll get more Ahsoka just herself as a character in the next couple of episodes, because particularly hopefully episode 5, if it doesn't happen by then, I think episode 5 will get some of Ahsoka, maybe those Anakin teases we were promised, because Dave Filoni's going to direct episode 5 of the series. So I'm assuming if it's very similar, it's going to happen there. I think this episode was directed by Steph Green again, and next week's episode is being Peter Ramsey apparently is directing it, who I looked up, he's worked a lot in animation. He did Monsters vs. Aliens, Rise of the Guardians, and he co-directed the first Spider-Verse film.
Oh, right. So he's got pretty good credentials, then. So
he also directed, I think, the pirate episodes from the last series of Mando.
Oh, right.
There you go. Some unique view. And then, obviously, Filoni's coming back for episode 5, so I assume that something big is going to happen in that episode if he's stepping in to do it.
Yeah, I have a speculation that might be when Anakin shows up as episode 5. So we'll have to wait and see if that is the case. Mm-hmm. But,
because there has been those trailers with dialogue from what definitely Hayden Christensen saying, you can do this, Ahsoka. So it seems like we're getting some potential flashbacks here of some like Clone Wars stuff, but with Christensen in that role. Which is nice, because like you said before, we didn't get to see her in the prequels, but this is kind of the closest we could have gotten to that.
Yeah, that'd be quite cool if they do some sort of like flashbacks like that, to be fair. Quite like that, if that's the direction they take.
Yeah. I don't know who's doing the like 6 and 7, but I looked ahead of there's a director that Rick Famuyiwa is doing the finale, and like he recently has been doing like major episodes, like especially the recent season of Mando. Like he did the last couple episodes of that. And he's like one of the main producers now and within this like kind of world. So alongside like Filoni and Favreau, he seems to be part of the core group. So you can tell that if he's getting given the responsibility of the finale, then something major is going to happen there as well.
Oh yeah, you definitely think the finale will have some big things happening, no doubt. So anything else you want to add to this episode before we go into our ratings and whatnot?
And nothing more about the episode, really. I think, as short as it was, I think it's a case of this is important in terms of setting the groundwork for something big to go down next episode, whether this be the episode where we get Thorne, or at least we get that duel between Bail and Ahsoka. So, you know, it was important setting the groundwork. I wouldn't call it filler. So, it did what it needed to.
Yeah, definitely more going on than your average episode of Andor, that's for flipping sure.
And thankfully, Mon Mothma's part in this episode was very, very brief, because when I see her, I think of those long fucking dinner party or whatever conversations she was having in Andor, or her having those chats with fucking Stellan Skarsgård character. I'm like, oh my god. And a show that is already boring as fuck, you are the most boring part of it.
Were you not entertained?
No. I was very much the opposite of entertained. Unless I had Andy Serkis involved in it, I was not entertained.
I mean, I would probably give this episode probably about 7.5 out of 10. I mean, it's a good episode, but nothing sort of mind-blowing. So that would be my sort of fair assessment.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough rating. I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10 as well. Again, not bad, but, you know, I think there was a lot of hype going into the first two episodes, and they packed a lot into those that this will definitely seem like, I think when we look back on the series, this will definitely be an important building episode.
Yeah, I do get the feeling that it's going to be one of those series that is going to be really enjoyable to sort of binge watch it, sort of all in one go.
Yeah, because like, no, I'm not taking shots at Mando, because I know some people weren't as happy about the recent series of Mando. I think like if this was Mando, we'd had those two really good episodes, and this third one would have been them doing like, oh, we've had to solve more quests because this random side thing has came up. Whereas no, this is them continuing on the quest. So while you can kind of call it filler, it didn't actually really stray from the main plot of the series at all.
No, definitely not. There's definitely a proper sort of thread, and everything looks like it really is sort of linked together. So, you know, if you watched it all together, it'd probably be like one big long movie. That's how I'm sort of envisioning this Ahsoka series anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I very much look forward to the next one. You know, I do like that we're recording this the same day the episode came out, which is a rarity for us, but now I'm like, oh no, that's another 7 days for the next one.
I know, yeah.
whose idea was it to do this whole weekly TV bullshit again?
I mean, I did watch the first two episodes about 2 or 3 more times, to be honest, so I'll probably give this a few more watches as well while I'm waiting.
Yeah, I'll probably do the same thing.
But any plugs, Scott?
I do have a couple of plugs, yes. Scott and Paul's Ram podcast at SBRling on Twitter. You can find episodes of that on the Rogue Opinions feed and also its own feed wherever you get your podcasts. We've got some SummerSlam related content, some old SummerSlams that we're looking back on and covering. Doing stuff over ESSR at Suplex, retweet every so often. So give them a check out wherever you get your podcasts. Other than the stuff with Carl here, we also have Rant Bank, which I'm sure we'll get together to do another episode of soon. I do have something I want to promote. It's not to do with, it wasn't something I did, but something important to me, important to a friend of mine. A few years ago, a friend of mine called David Campbell, who I'm actually hoping to do an episode of No Rogues Barred with very soon, he made a film which had a lot of trials and tribulations, which I'll cover when I get the chance to chat to him. He made a film called 10 Reasons Not to Make a Movie. He had a screening of it like last year. I went to it. It's funny as fuck. And it's going to be on Amazon Prime free for everyone to watch on the 15th of September. So when that comes out, please watch it. If you have Amazon Prime, which I'm sure most of you do, have a watch of it. It will help really support him. It's a very independent film. It's a mockumentary style movie, but it is really funny. I'm an extra in it. I'm on it for all on screen for all of 30 seconds, but I'm there. But a lot of my friends are in it as well or are involved in it in some way. So have a check out for that. So check that out when it comes out, and also stay tuned for No Rogues Barred with me and David, where you'll learn more about him and you'll learn about what it took to actually get this film made.
Oh, right. Well, that sounds great. I'll have to check that out, even if it's just for your 30-second cameo, Scott.
But, wrestling fan number 3, I believe I'm credited as.
Brilliant. Sounds great.
Basically, it's a documentary about people talking about a film that went wrong, and David plays himself like as an exaggerated version of himself, this obnoxious director who blames everyone for his film's failure except himself, while everyone else basically comments on why he was the problem.
So that sounds like your typical director, to be fair.
Yeah, pretty much everybody below the people actually responsible getting blamed in terms of filmmaking. With the current strikes on, it's the most accurate movie you'll ever see, so go check it out. Yeah, that's all I got to say. Plug-wise, I just wanted to give him a shout-out because I'm going to be talking to him on this Rogue Opinions feed very soon about it, so I thought people deserve to know about this film.
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you keep a lookout for that. You can find us at Rogue_opinions across your socials. You can find me at Carlos_fire80 on all your socials. I keep the same handle. And you can check me out talking football with Liam and Nathan. And we can talk about how shite Manchester United are. And all that. I'm not sure if we're doing one this week because Arsenal only drew, so Liam hasn't been pestering us to record, strangely, because Arsenal didn't win. But Man United and Arsenal do play each other this weekend, so I'm quite sure there'll be a podcast next week if we don't do one for last week's fixtures. So keep your ears out for that.
It does feel like every time you talk about the football, you mention, oh, we're not recording, or Man City are doing shit, or Man U are doing shit. It feels like you say the same thing about every team every so often, even somebody who doesn't watch football. I'm like, he seems to say that certain teams aren't the same teams are doing shit every time he plugs that show.
Yeah, because normally it's the same teams doing well and the same teams doing shit, to be honest.
I mean, talking about football, we were at Wetherspoons waiting for our train to go to our accommodation in London, and there's a table next to us of these Fulham fans. They weren't into wrestling, they weren't going to watch All In, but they did support Fulham. So one of my friends went over to them and went, what do you guys think of Tony Khan? And they weren't fans. So they're like, well, this just needs to be more interested in his wrestling, isn't he, than he is about Fulham. Oh, yeah, probably. And I don't know if they asked us, but they asked us, well, what do you guys think of Tony Khan? What do you think he's a bit of a prick and all?
Yeah, he's not exactly over with the Fulham contingent, as you might say. But they did well. They got a draw against Arsenal, so, you know.
I should say, just before the zero properly, like, I thought there was nothing going on. Like, there were people falling out of the seats. We were just sitting in our seats. We got there within plenty of time before the first like zero match started. And then an advert plays. I think it's Rene Young voice, and it goes, see Fulham play Tottenham Hotspur. And instantly, there was just the amount of people that were on the stadium was like, advertising Fulham v Tottenham Hotspur in the middle of Wembley got fucking booed out the building, even though it wasn't even full yet. Then they advertised a Jacksonville Jaguar game in the UK. People booed that as well.
Did you see Mercedes Moné in the crowd? Was she there for the whole show? Was she?
Well, they randomly panned back to her in a random match later on in the show. So either she buggered off and then came back for that one bit, or she saved the whole show. So she must have been.
Yeah, because normally they just come out for that little bit, don't they, to go on camera, yeah, and they piss off again. But it does sound like she sat through the whole thing. So whether she was just watching as a fan or something, but you'd have thought she's going to be getting brought in if she was there.
Yeah, I think she got injured like back in May, and so I think they wanted her bigger in before now. Like, they wanted her Forbidden Door to fight Jamie Hayter before they both got hurt. And I think people were reporting afterwards, like, oh yeah, if she'd been clear, she would have debuted back at Blood and Guts, because that was in Boston and that's where she's.
That's true, yeah.
Whoever was in that section, she should have leaned down forward and said, hey, why don't you tell anybody you were coming back for more Mandalorian? You said when you first showed up, you were only in one episode, then you appeared in the season 2 finale, and you did more stuff for season 3. Well, if you're lying about that, what else would you have been lying about?
And you can't trust these actors, can you? Like the Spider-Man actors saying, "Oh, we're not in No Way Home."
Well, Andrew Garfield was. He was throwing a film that a lot of people said, "Oh, that you'll get a lot of awards for this," but all anyone could ask him about was bloody Spider-Man. Where Tobey Maguire had the luxury of, "Oh, I'm not doing this at the minute, so nobody's trying to ask me in an interview if I'm Spider-Man." No. You know, she's lied about a lot. I'm starting to wonder if Mercedes Money is even her real name.
Not quite. Mercedes is a real name, though.
Yeah, no. That was the joke.
The money part isn't.
Yeah, she's got the money for a perfectly good seat at Wembley, though.
I bet she did. It'll always be Sasha Banks to me. I don't shoot names.
Still real with me, damn it.
So I made the mistake of calling Soraya Page earlier on in the podcast, because that's how I know I can't get used to calling her Soraya. I did think her coming out to We Will Rock You was pretty cool. Maybe not her whole family being there because they're a bunch of dicks, but I did like a leather jacket with the bits of Union Jack on it. It was, you know, there were some cool elements going on there, to be fair.
Yeah, I just looked at her family, especially my own dad, thinking like, yeah, it was a fair choice getting Nick Frost and Lena Headey in for your mom and dad, but when you look at them, actually, no matter how accurate it was, it's still far too generous for what your mom and dad actually look like. I mean, I wouldn't say that to their face because they'd fucking kill me. But I did laugh very hard when Saraya's mum grabbed, I think it was Cheetah, and for Toy Storm hit her and she moved and she accidentally hit her. And I'm like, oh, girl, that's it. No friendship ever recovers from a punch to the maw.
No, that's it. It's all over now.
The outcast, we hardly knew ye.
All right, well, Scott, I'm going to love you and leave you, I think, in a minute or two. So what's not getting? Just like Podding, working out the London Underground isn't easy.
Neither is paying £4 for Haribo. Bye, everyone.
Bye.